Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 115 of Art for Your Ear. Today's episode is sponsored by, you guessed it, Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit them at saatchiart.com, and don't forget to pop by limited.saatchiart.com to see their brand new website filled with limited edition prints. Just in time for the holidays. Anyway, today I am talking to Philadelphia-based glass artist Amber Cowan. Her work is absolutely mind-blowing. All I know is that there is a lot of vintage glass, beautiful milky colors, and lots and lots and lots of detail. Now, I happen to be a bit of a glass expert myself after my week at the University of Wisconsin. Yes, I blew some glass. I screamed once. And that was about that. I am guessing that Amber doesn't scream when she's in the hot shop. Hot shop. I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. Hot shop. Anyway, let's let an expert explain the ins and outs, shall we? Calling Amber in Philly. Hi, Amber.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
So you have just gotten back from dropping off a whole bunch of art somewhere.
I just finished a big piece that is going down to Art Miami with Heller Gallery, the gallery that I mainly show with. And so I finished a new big piece, and I took it up to New York to the gallery before Thanksgiving, because the work gets, I think the show opens on the 6th of December, but they got to drive it all down there and set it all up. So.
Are you going to go to Miami for it?
I am, but not until Thursday, because the opening's actually on Tuesday, but I teach one class, and I have finals that day.
What a good teacher you are. You could just call
in
sick.
Any other day, I would definitely miss it for that, but I can't really miss the final, so.
All right, Fair enough. I would just call in sick. I have a case of the Miamis. I got to go. Well, that is very exciting. I went down last year, but I'm not going this year. And it feels like, according to social media, that everyone in the world is going. So I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's. I think maybe this might be my fourth year going down there. It's really, I have a lot of fun.
It's so cool. Although what?
Yeah, after that I want to buy art myself, and then I spend the money that I make. So
there you go. It's just the circle of life that is art.
That's what I think.
I'm going to get back to asking you what that piece is that you sent down there. But I always go through the podcast sort of in a chronological order. So I want to know about what you were like when you were a kid and how you got into glass and all of that stuff. So when you were little, were you making stuff or not yet?
Yeah, I definitely always was making stuff. My high school actually had a really good ceramics program. We had maybe over a dozen wheels.
Wow.
So I started out, I was always into 3D stuff. I've never been... like a drawer or painter or anything like that. In fact, I'm actually I'm not, it's just not my inclination at all. I really don't even draw or anything still. I do small 3D sketches of what I'm making or working on.
Wow.
I did a lot of ceramics, and then, I did actually always like glass, and I just had this fascination with it. The story is that when I was a little girl, I found these like pink elephant swizzle sticks in my parents' cabinet.
Oh yeah.
And I just really liked this object, like these little frosted glass elephants. that was kind of my first thing that got, like, I just was always fascinated with glass since I was a child, really.
Wow, that's really cool, actually. And I could almost picture those things. Do you still have them, the elephants?
Yeah, I still have. There's like a set of four of them that I still have. So they're really cute. But yeah, and then I realized too later that like if I would buy my mom a present, it would always be like it'd be like a glass pin or like something like that.
Wow, so it's just in you.
Yeah, I started doing some stained glass and stuff in high school, and then I picked my undergrad because they had a glass program.
And had you made anything like other than the stained glass? Had you done anything in high school, or it was your first try was in school?
Yeah, no, I hadn't done anything like hot glass blowing, anything like that until I went to college.
Okay. And where did you go?
So I went to undergrad at Salisbury University in Maryland.
Mm.
And they had a very new program. I didn't realize that at the time, but I didn't really feel like I was ready for an art school right away. I'm not sure why, but it just, so, but Salisbury happens to be one of the few public universities, not art school specifically, that actually has a glass studio.
Oh, okay.
And
where were you from? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in York, Pennsylvania.
Okay. So how far?
I live in Philadelphia now. But,
yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. And so, but
I took a roundabout way back to Pennsylvania.
Okay. Okay. So you're at school and you get to try glass for the first time.
Yeah, so they pretty much just had a hot shop, like, you know, traditional large-scale glass blowing.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that, and but I was really more interested in, like, learning how to do flame working, or, you know, there's two terms for what most people know my work as. It's flame working or lamp working. I am just going to use the word flame working just
okay.
But so I basically just bought a torch from one of the other guys there and just kind of started teaching myself. We didn't have anyone there that taught it in particular.
Mm.
And so for 2 years, I had no idea what I was doing, but I was just trying to make stuff.
You had to make those swizzle sticks.
Yeah, I figured that out. But so then I got my degree from there. My degree is in three-dimensional design with a concentration in glass. But, you know, when I graduated, the glass hadn't even, it wasn't even on the books yet. It was like that kind of fresh as far as a program. It was only really just a few years old. When I was a junior at Salisbury, I did a study abroad program in Italy, in Rome.
Oh my gosh.
And so I met some friends through that program that lived in New York City. They were going to Fordham University in the Bronx. And so pretty much immediately, like when I graduated, I packed up all my stuff and I moved to New York City. So.
Were you freaking out or were you thrilled?
I was thrilled, but thinking about myself moving there now freaks me out. Because I had no money. Oh my God, you have to be like, I'm so glad I was young and naive
when
I did that and full of like, you know, because now there's no way I would move to New York with no money and no job prospects and nothing, you know?
Oh, youth.
I know.
Yeah. That's awesome. So did you move in with them?
Yeah. So I had a bunch of friends already that lived up there because, you know, once I came back, I hadn't yet graduated, but I would go up to New York like once a month. I was kind of done with the small town. And so I would go up once a month for like almost a year. And so then when I moved up to New York, I was living in Brooklyn, and I started, luckily this woman gave me a job who is still one of my best friends, but at the time she was my boss. her name is Michiko Sakano. She is a very talented glassblower and maker and boss lady.
What was your job with, like, work? Just, yeah, what were you doing with her?
So a lot, I had a bunch of different jobs when I lived in New York, but a lot of them were glassblowing assistant. So okay. Hot shop assistant, like with large scale glassblowing, not flame working, like offhand glass making, you almost always need an assistant to help you make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would do a lot. I would help her, and there was a bunch of other people that I would help blow glass and make their work.
And so were you able to have time to do what you wanted to be doing?
No.
Oh, okay.
I had a million different jobs. I was also bartending. I had just so many different random jobs. I was making cufflinks for this, like flamework cufflinks for this company. I was working production for a bunch of different people. I was teaching a lot of like classes, like short workshops, either 6-week workshops or 1-week workshops.
Hustling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I did that for 5 years and then just got kind of burnt out with it. And so I applied to grad school. I only applied to 2 schools. And I was either going to go to grad school or I was going to completely change my career.
Literally burnt out.
Yeah.
So where did you apply? Tyler.
I only applied to Tyler and to Alfred.
And you went to Tyler.
I didn't get into Alfred. Yeah.
Well, there's your answer. There's where, that's what's next.
And actually, the funny thing is that the department head, I don't even think she would have given me an interview, but I just showed up and and knocked on her door. And she liked me. So that's how
wow,
that worked.
Wow, that's amazing. And don't you teach there now?
Yeah. I started teaching actually my first year in grad school.
Oh.
And I've only taken one semester off since then.
Do you teach full time?
No. I teach, now I only teach one class, but I was teaching 2 classes for a little while. So right now I either teach none if I'm really busy with a show, or up to 2.
Okay. And what do you teach? Do you teach, what's it called? Flame? No.
Flame working?
Yeah.
Well, kind of. I teach, right now I'm actually teaching like a seminar, the senior seminar class.
Mm.
So it's like, it's pretty cool. It's like all the glass majors that they're graduating next semester. And 2 of them are graduating this semester. So those, I help them with their BFA shows, like planning, conceptualizing the work, trying to figure out the work, making their show cards, all that.
Oh, that's really cool. See the whole thing through. Well, I know all about hot shops.
Yeah.
Because, I did a week-long visiting professorship at University of Wisconsin.
Oh.
And they have all the regular stuff, but they also had ceramics and glass. And my school didn't have that stuff, so I was never exposed to any of it. And so when I got there, I was not supposed to be in those departments at all, but I was like, can I try it? So I knew nothing. And so they let me, I got to blow a glass ornament for my son for Christmas. And then they let me sit down and pull some glass, and I ended up making a thing that looks like a really inappropriate banana. Let's just go with that.
There's a lot of those in the first classes.
That's what they said. They were like, well, that's kind of your initiation. If you hadn't gone out of here making something that was phallic, you would have done it wrong. And I was like, okay, well, nailed it. But I was so intimidated in there. It is, first of all, it's freaking hot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're in Wisconsin and the students are wearing like tank tops and shorts because it's just so blazing hot in there. And then everything can burn you. I was really quite scared. They took a video of me and I screamed in it because I was squeezing it too hard. And I guess the wax on the tip of something.
Oh, it made a little fire.
Yeah, it made a little fire, which I was, nobody told me there could be fire. And so I screamed and I just like, I look ridiculous because I was so scared. So now when I was able to get you on, I was like, oh man, we'll see, now I'm a pro, but I can just ask you the follow-up questions.
Yeah, it can be intimidating, you know, hot shops can be intimidating. I think that the interesting thing is that like with flame working, you work by yourself and it's a much more like kind of zoned out process. Oh my God, my cat is like in my studio right now making noise. That's kind of scary.
I just heard that.
Yeah.
Are you not in there or?
No, I'm in my.
Uh-oh. Do you want to go look?
But yeah, like flame working, I feel like a lot of art students are more introverts and, you know, kind of introspective, and the hot shop can be intimidating because it's almost like you're on a stage with people watching.
Totally.
But flame working is more of a you with alone with the material type of process, and you can kind of like hide and be alone. That was more my style. You know?
So is it sort of more intimate? Like, are you working over a small flame? Is that why it's called that?
Kind of. We use like a tabletop torch.
Okay.
If you saw my torch, you probably wouldn't say that it was a small flame,
right? But
some of them are, you know, like think of like bead makers.
Yeah,
that's a flame working process too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Teeny tiny, and all of your stuff is so teeny tiny.
Yeah, some of it, but also because of the process that I've worked out for myself, I can actually make. For flame working sense, I can actually make larger parts too. I do work in the hot shop as well, and some of my work is combination.
Okay.
Yeah.
But do you still prefer? Do you prefer one over the other, or you just sort of, they have to be in tandem?
No, I spend most of my time flame working. I have a separate studio. I have my own studio to do that. And then if I want to blow glass, I use the studio at Tyler.
Okay. And so are you kind of, in a way, self-taught then if they weren't really teaching that method?
No. So only for like the first 2 years. And then I was really educated by taking and assisting with classes at the Studio of the Corning Museum of Glass.
Oh.
So I started going up there, taking classes, when I was fresh out of undergrad, and I have probably taken, TA'd, or taught over a dozen classes at Corning.
That is really cool. And so, yeah, you get to teach but learn at the same time.
Yeah, and so what I would do is I couldn't really afford to take a lot of classes, so I would just write to teachers directly that I wanted to take their class and say, hey, do you need an assistant for this class? And once in a while it would work.
Wow, that's smart.
And then also I, you know, made friends with the director there and the secretary, and I said, hey, if you ever need an assistant for any of these classes, if someone needs one or if someone drops out, like, please call me. And it worked.
Wow, that's awesome. That's youthful gumption too.
Yeah, it worked definitely. And so that way, so my methods, I use what's called soft glass, and my methods come from a Venetian, techniques mostly. My main teachers are primarily Italians. I TA'd many times for an artist named Gianni Toso, who is well known in the flameworking community. His family is like 600-year Venetian heritage.
Oh my gosh.
And he was one of the people that he just needed someone, and they randomly called me. And I've been, and after that, I TA'd for him maybe 3 or 4 times, and he's still one of my very close friends. So, him, Emilio Santini, Lucio Bevacco, you know, these are all people. And then also, Paul Stankard, who you probably know his work.
I recognize his name. Yeah.
Yeah. He makes the like gorgeous clear orbs that are inside. Looks like you just picked a flowers and put it right inside a clear glass.
Mm-hmm.
But I also TA'd for him, and then later worked for him after grad school. So I'm kind of taught my techniques through a number of different people, primarily at like Corning and these different summertime art schools. So, you know, if anyone listening is interested in learning how to make glass, I would highly recommend Corning, the summer classes at Corning.
That is so cool. I would love to. I wish I was closer. now that I've gotten over my terror and I you know, I've got all the screams out, I think I'd be ready. But
on the West Coast, Pelchuk Glass School is the place to go for learning.
Where is that?
It's in Washington State.
Oh, okay.
I was just always on the East Coast, so I always went to Corning. But if I was on the West Coast, I would have gone there. So
that's good to know. Did you ever go to Venice?
Yeah, I went when I was, I think I was 21 and very broke on my Italy trip. But what's really cool is that the Glass Art Society Conference is in Venice this year. It's in Murano in May. And I'm actually going to be on a panel there. And then I'm teaching a class the week after the conference at the school called the Abadi Zanetti School. And it's really cool. I'm very excited about the chance to teach on Murano. So
no kidding. That is amazing.
Yeah. Oh. I hope it fills
I'm sure it will. I am sure it will. Like, what a cool experience for everybody.
Yeah. Everyone's really excited in the glass community right now about this conference.
I imagine. I mean, I was in Venice. I don't know anything about glass, but I was in Venice this past summer for the Biennale, and just the glass work that's everywhere. There was a huge glass show that was on that was part of it, and that was, well, it wasn't, it's like one of the little side galleries that is part of the Biennale, and it was beautiful.
Was it the Glassstress show?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I would love to see that.
It was crazy. And like, I don't know if it was just when we went there, but we were basically the only people in there. I know it was a really popular show, but we must have just hit a window of time where there was just nobody in there. And so it was even more magical. And then the building was so insanely beautiful. And the work was crazy. We were in there for ages and I could have stayed longer. But that was sort of my first like real, you know, I mean, I've written about you before and I've written about other glass artists, but I don't know that much about it. And so that being in Venice this summer was my first real look at it. And then to go to Wisconsin shortly thereafter and have somebody say, hey, you want to blow glass? And I was like, oh my God. So I was so excited to get you on here because this truly is such a mystery to so many people, right? And like to hear you talk about it in such detail, like that not only did you study that, like that was your concentration, but then you go and you find these even smaller, you know, specialties to work with these, you know, Italian to do this specific type of work. And it's just so cool. And like what a cool niche you found.
Well, you know, glass making in particular, flameworking is actually getting there's a lot of people doing it now. So it's interesting. It's definitely gaining in popularity from when I was first starting.
And is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's good in the sense that the more glassmaker, you know, the better the colors are, because the color companies have more money to experiment and try to make new colors. And this isn't the kind of glass that I work with, though. We're getting off on a tangent here, you know, like, there's a whole industry of flame workers, for pipe making, basically, which is, you know, it's very different than the work I make, but the innovations in the material and watching innovations in flame working in the last few years it's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. And that must be good for you as a teacher of it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we only have 4 torches, so I do demos and stuff at school, but it's not like I can teach a full class in it.
Okay.
So
let's talk about what you do, because I don't get it. Because, so, there's vintage. So, tell me how you do what you do.
Well, I guess I find my material in a number of different ways.
Are they basically like glass collages?
Yeah. Most of the material that I use comes from, the colors come from basically a glass scrapyard, that was supplied by an old pressed glass factory in West Virginia.
Oh my God. That sounds like a wonderland.
it's an interesting place. So most of the glass is in these large barrels or in these big outdoor piles. Like a yard with bays, like a cement bays.
Yeah.
The glass is in these like piles, mountains in these cement bays, basically. So what I do is go there and I find a color that I like. And so for example, like for a piece like that, the large green piece, Bridesmaid's Forest,
mm-hmm.
I just made for my show at the Fuller Craft Museum that was up this summer. You know, this piece, I found that green. I really loved it. I started making those parts. So almost everything you see, I make by hand.
Okay.
On a torch. So all those flowers, leaves, vines, all that organic matter is all stuff that I make on my torch.
Whoa.
Yeah, I use my primary tools are bonsai shears, tiny presses, and tweezers.
And fire. So you pick the color that you like, and then do you just melt it down? And then that's your blob where you start with?
Yeah, so I basically, the glass kind of looks like, say you took a glass plate and you dropped it on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's in these just shards or chunks. That is what my raw material looks like when I get it. And so I'll heat that up in a kiln to about 1,000 degrees. And then I pick it up on, I call it a punty. That's a glass term. But it's essentially a handle. And then I melt that down into a blob. And then I make my shape out of it. And then I put it back in the kiln to anneal or cool. And so
you make all those teeny tiny little.
Yeah.
And so do you have a plan? Like, do you know that you need X many flowers and X many leaves or?
No, I would drive myself insane.
Yeah, that would drive me insane too.
Yeah, I kind of just go in and just make a bunch of parts. I try not to think until the piece is almost finished. I just go for it. And then as the piece gets like 95% finished, then I'm like, oh, okay, now I need like three more vines or.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. To make the composition work or whatever.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. And like, what about the, like all your tiny, those tiny little balls that you make?
I make all of them.
Oh my word. See now, okay. This is what I misunderstood because the reason I said, is it like a glass collage? Because I was picturing that all of these bits and pieces were like those swizzle sticks.
No.
You know, like that you had these found things and then you broke them apart and somehow reassembled them. But no, you're making all the teeny little things.
Yeah, those little balls take me forever.
I imagine.
But they look, so it's like I have to do it. Now, that being said, there is, okay, so for example, in that piece again, there are seven animals in this piece. There's six animals and one lady figurine. So basically what I do is I find that color and then I do research on what was originally made in that color by the factory.
Oh.
So I'll go on eBay or to thrift stores, or I basically just like, or sometimes I'll put out a search like, hey, I'm looking for this thing. Does anyone have it? Know where to get it? So that the lady in this piece, there's a lady figurine, a deer, a turtle, a snail, a whale, a duck, a butterfly. So those things I actually found or purchased, and then I incorporate them into the piece.
Okay.
But they were original items that were made from that exact same color.
Wow. Now my mind is officially blown. Okay, now what happens when those bays are empty and you can't go to your piles?
Yeah, well...
Or are you the only one going there right now?
I think I am. No, there's a lot of glass in there right now. It's an interesting thing. They have probably about 2 years more glass in there. But you know, this isn't the only place that I get my glass. I also use glass from a couple different sources. So, for example, the piece that I just made, and a piece that was also at my show at Fuller, was called Ginny's 16-piece snack set. And I actually don't think I have a picture of this on my website, but I'll have to put one up. But basically, once people got the word that I was reusing this glass, now I get glass from all over the country from people I've never met before.
That's cool.
It's really cool. So the Ginny's piece was this woman out in suburban Philadelphia who I got a 16-piece milk glass snack set. So eight plates and eight teacups. So do you remember those snack sets in like the 50s and 60s?
Yep. My grandmother had them.
Yeah, a plate with a little inset for a teacup.
Yep.
There is a particular line of these that I use a lot. There's a particular line of these that I use a lot. They're from the Indiana Glass Factory. And those snack sets are really abundant in thrift stores and people giving it away because the original snack sets were acquired and sold through the redemption of S&H Green stamps.
I don't know what that is.
No, you don't remember what that is?
No.
So they were, if you Google that, they were basically like, these stamps that if you went to the grocery store or to get gas, depending upon how much money you would spend, it would print out these stamps and you would put them, like lick them and put them in these booklets. and then go to this store and redeem them for home goods.
Oh my gosh. Primarily snack sets?
Yeah, including one of the items was these snack sets. So a lot of people had them. And then the next generation or two after them was like, these things are kind of ugly and dated and heavy. Like, I don't want them anymore. So.
And what kind of colors do they come in?
Well, those are just white. They're just milk glass.
Okay.
So I use a lot of those snack sets.
That's so funny. That is really cool, though, that people are starting, and after this podcast, too, get ready, that people will send you that stuff.
It's cool, too. I mean, so, you know, one of the other pieces at my show, this piece, Sky Mountain with Koi, which is like this piece on a large blue cake plate.
Mm-hmm.
That piece includes this glass that I got the coolest piece this summer from this woman, Carolyn, who sent me, I have a note right here, actually. She sent me this really beautiful, like, transparent blue candy dish. And she said that it was broken. So she didn't want to throw it away, but she didn't really want to keep it. She didn't know what to do with it. So basically she said, this was from my grandfather, Orza Wilson, won this at a fair in Lexington, Tennessee, and gave it as a engagement gift to my grandmother in 1890.
What?
Yeah. And she's like, hope you find something to do with it.
And you don't know her?
No, I've never met her.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I get stuff like this.
Wow. Often. That's, yeah, that's crazy. And then so do you,
So sometimes if, you know, if it has a really beautiful pattern or like something like that, I'll use it in my work and try to like incorporate that somehow. So I don't
instead of melting it. Yeah.
I'll melt down, you know, I'll potentially melt down some of it, but if there's like a really nice handle or like a really beautiful lip or something like that, or even I could even use the whole piece. I might still use that. I have still the whole front of it. So I, you know, I try to incorporate it into the piece somehow. So.
That is so crazy. Do you ever incorporate their stories?
Yeah. I mean, I always try to tell the stories with the piece as much as possible.
Yeah.
At the Fuller show, we had a like laminated sheets that numbered all the pieces. And I had that story, with the piece, that went with the number of that piece.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
Yeah. Thanks.
Wow. That just opens up a whole other thing, creatively for you, you know, like you get these beautiful little bits and these stories that wouldn't have even been anything in your head had that not arrived in your mail.
Yeah, totally. I love it. I think it's cool because the people, you know, they kind of don't know what to do with this stuff, but they feel like it's special, but they, you know.
Yeah, and they trust you with it. That's the really cool part. Do you know how she knew of you?
You know, I think that maybe I had an article on American Craft.
Okay.
So I think it was that, but then I had, in October, I had an article in Oprah magazine.
Oh.
And I got a bunch of stuff after that.
Too. Yeah, I was going to say, that would probably do it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I was like, I don't know how they find out about me, but they contact me. They're like, do you want this stuff? Can I send it? I'm like, yeah, of course.
Oh my God, that's cool. I just did a thing, again, when I was in Wisconsin, because I was teaching in the mornings, but then I had studio time in the afternoon, and I didn't really know what I was going to do, and but I was really, because of being in Venice, I'd been really inspired by There was a few installations there where you could contribute your own bits and pieces to it. And so, you know, in May, the thing was one thing, but by November, it looked completely different, right? Because people from all over the world had contributed. And I'm a control freak with my collages and stuff. So I thought, well, you know what I'm going to do so that the students don't feel like I'm just tucked away in the studio. I put a big envelope on my door that said, put stuff in here. And whatever people put in there, I would try and incorporate into the collages that I was doing. Not good for a control freak, but it was really cool because, again, there it just, you know, sparked ideas that I would never have had on my own.
Yeah.
So it's kind of opened up, and, you know, and just hearing you talk about this is like, that is really, truly like a cool global collaboration. I wonder if there's a place, there's got to be a place in Venice where you can go and get old broken glass to take home with you.
Yeah, that would be cool.
There must be.
I know. I feel like I've been on this American kind of American industry thing for a while. It would be interesting to see how I could use glass from even a different country.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Well, you know that like the sign graveyard in Vegas or whatever. That's what I'm picturing in Murano, you know, just like you go around a corner and there's some old thing and just piles all color-coded.
Yeah.
And just load up your suitcase before anyone notices. Yeah. That would be amazing. That is my dream for you. Okay, and so as far as, you know, the pieces, like how do you come up with, you know, what are your narratives and how do those ideas form? And like you were saying that you don't sketch them, right? You do little 3D renderings?
No, I mean, not computer renderings.
Oh, okay.
Just like little, like small mock-ups.
Oh.
Mostly, and I mean, what I'll do is like just get the color and just start kind of cranking out shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the narrative will a lot of time build if I find the special characters, you know, like finding that girl, finding the snail.
Right, after you've done your research about the color, and I'm sure, is that what sort of starts to trigger? Like, yeah.
Seeing what else was made, and I'm like, ooh, I really like that thing. You know, but also, like, that's more the work people know me for, too. Like, I had a large installation at the show this summer that was made out of just all milk glass bud vases.
So yeah, I saw a picture of that. That looked amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, so that piece was basically just, it was, I had made that over a year, and I basically made, like, a couple of them a week for a year. And those were just, like, milk glass bud vases that you can pick up at any thrift store, flea market, things like that. And I would do, like, just quick alterations to give them kind of like a animation or a character.
Wow.
And that was a really fun piece to make. It was fun to finally see it up because I didn't have anywhere in my life to actually put this thing up until it was up at the show. So
how many were there then? Over 100? There was 100. Oh my gosh. So now where are they?
They're all in my studio. I'm trying to find a place for the next place it's going to go now, actually.
That's a really good idea. And it must have been a nice thing to have, like to do a couple of week just for the break in, you know, in what you're doing just to be, you know, just shake things up.
Yeah. And actually that piece kind of grew. And also this other piece that was across from it, which were these kind of slumped milk glass pieces that took on their own little character as well. Those pieces kind of came out of, I do a collaboration show occasionally with a couple of the other professors at Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other professors at Tyler have, or that are my colleagues that I am working and friends with, make these really labor-intensive works like I do as well, but then they have these other things that are like these quick kind of processes that they just like have fun with and do them, and they're not like these laborious couple month long projects. And mm-hmm. I was kind of looking for something that was more like sketching, and all three of them do drawings and paintings, mm-hmm. which I don't do. So I was kind of looking for something where it would be more of like an immediate fun thing that would relate to my work, but it would give me more of like an instant character, instant like animation to the glass.
Mm-hmm. Well, so while we're talking, I'm sitting here looking at the picture on your Skype thing of all those teeny tiny little balls of glass and petals and stuff that'd be like, oh, that would be really refreshing just to shape something and be done.
Yeah, and a lot of times the piece is shaped in the kiln, and all I do is set the program. So
right.
it's really nice too.
Yeah. Well, and who knows, who have you merged them? Have those little characters ended up getting covered in leaves and little balls and stuff?
No. There's a series that I did a few years back that's kind of emerging of those. They're like the pieces like the wedding compotes in Colony Harvest. Those are kind of an emerging of that fast process and my laborious process, mm-hmm. I guess.
That's interesting. It's just, that's so cool that you've kind of discovered that little bit of release.
It's nice, yeah. Yeah. I mean, because some of my large pieces, they take a few months to make.
Oh, I'm sure. The first time I found your work, I do not have patience, which is why I do really simple collages. And the first time I saw them, I was just, you know, in love, but also just like, whoa, I just know I physically could not do that, you know? And so they do have that impact where just the whoa, you know, element to them. But as another, you know, as artist to artist, I'm very happy that you have a little quick release that you can, have that. Cause it is like sketching.
Yeah. It's nice to have a faster process. I mean, I like making my work. You know, and I'm usually working on a bunch of pieces at the same time as well. You know, even just changing the color gets me less bored sometimes.
Yeah, I could see that. Does your neck get sore?
Oh God, I've had really bad neck and back problems for like the last 2 months, and it finally cleared up like this week. So,
I'm glad I didn't ask you that last week.
Yeah, I'm learning. I'm working on it. It comes and goes, but almost every flame worker I know has neck and back problems.
Well, I'm sure. Like, that's why I'm just picturing you, you know, like concentrating and being bent over like that to, you know, to do these teeny little things.
Yeah. Actually, I found that the one thing that is my issue, it's, I need, I have to use like a padding, elbow padding when I work because, it's a whole thing, but
do your hands get tired or no?
No, I don't have too much hand stuff. It's more like neck and back.
Yeah. I have neck and back things too, which is why when I see your work, I'm sort of a bit like, ooh, because I know it would hurt my neck. I want to talk about your, because I've had you on here for ages already, but I want to talk about, I just saw them on your website, those, the hands holding up the doilies.
Yeah.
Are those new?
I really like those. They're new. Yeah, they were for the show this summer. And, you know, they kind of came out of that quick process stuff too. But also, like, I had been collecting those. Okay, so those green hands.
Yeah.
Are actually... vintage jadeite jewelry stands that I had been collecting for a few years. I didn't know what I was going to do with them. But I just liked them, and I knew I wanted to make something with them. But basically, those sit on a table, and they just go straight up. It looks like just like a mannequin hand that you would like hold use to hold jewelry.
Right.
And so I had my assistant make this specialized thing, a stand thing for the hot shop, so that I could put the hand on there and then manipulate the fingers hot. So I did all those, like how they're pinching.
Yeah.
I did that while the hand was reheated.
Were you afraid of losing their fingers?
I was the first one, but then I realized the glass was actually really beautiful to work with.
Oh.
And I didn't, I think out of maybe 10, I only lost one or two.
Wow.
Yeah. But then,
were you scared with the first one? I guess you had backups.
A little bit, but I had probably a dozen of them already. And at that point, I still wasn't quite sure what I was doing with it. It's wild that this piece came out, because this is actually one of my favorite pieces at the show. And it was like just such a, like there was, I was working on so many different pieces at once that, I don't know, it's just, I haven't quite fully come to terms with this piece, but it's one of my favorites. So the handkerchiefs, those are basically just milk glass cake plates.
Like,
lace edge cake plates.
Wow.
Yeah, so the process for making those is such an interesting process. I had a stand fabricated for me, and basically I just string these things up and get it to this perfect temperature where it just falls over and starts to droop and look like lace. But it's this wild process where if I leave it up at that high temperature in the kiln for 20 seconds more, like if I just go and check my phone, the piece is on the kiln floor and completely destroyed. So it's one of these things where it's this fast process, but it's so specific to timing where it gets that thing. It's like that thing that you want, that like, you know, it's like that umami like moment, you know?
Yeah, that's crazy. And so do you have to, that, I don't think this is how it works, right? You have to, you don't take it out of the kiln at that moment, but you drop the temperature?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called crashing the kiln. So at that exact moment, you basically shut the kiln down shut that high temperature down.
You wreck a bunch trying to figure out when that crashing moment was?
So many. I'm about 50-50 on those. Yeah.
Step one, put your phone away.
I've gotten a lot of interesting comments on them. You know, and I think that a lot of times my more refined work, as far as like the wall sculptures, I think people like, they don't necessarily understand it, but they look at it in a sense of like, this is what it should be, or it's, I don't know how to explain it, but I think that these pieces show those unique properties of glass and the movement of the material in a way that maybe my other pieces don't. The similarity.
Yeah, 'cause they sort of look like they're melt. They look melty right now.
Melty, or I think that the similarity is that maybe, you know, a lot of my other work, even though it's hard and sharp and, you know, glass, it still looks very soft and maybe like it could move. Or you could touch it and it would be soft or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. I've got interesting comments. One of the writers about the, like, someone reviewed the show and only pretty much wrote about these pieces, but they were saying that they looked like lace panties put out on the line to dry. Yeah. I've gotten all kinds of interesting comments, but
what do you think of them? Because it was kind of interesting when I just asked you about them. You sort of paused for a second before you talked about them. Like, are you not quite sure, or are you loving them, or?
I love them, but I'm not quite sure about how to talk about them yet.
Yeah.
Or to, like, I know that they fit in with the rest of my work, but I think that it's a step in a different direction.
It's an evolution, and whether it goes somewhere or not, or
I think it will. I'm excited to make more pieces like this, and I think I'm happy with them. I'm just haven't quite come to terms with them.
Yeah, they are quite different just because they are so much simpler and whatever. I mean, but I love all your work, and when I went cruising by your site the other day to get these questions together, I was like, oh my God, like I just instantly loved them. And so I was curious to see what you thought.
They're, you know, I think that in a sense, they're also about the hands of the maker and like the hands of the manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're almost like these puppets, like moving this material as well.
Just like you.
Yeah, I mean, it's all vintage glass. Like, I didn't, you know, I just moved it a little bit, you know?
Yeah, you retold the story.
I just pushed it in a little bit different direction. I didn't completely transform as far as my other work, how I take that glass and make it into a big hot mass and then make my own shape out of it,
right.
You know?
So. Well, see, I really like that. And again, maybe it's because I'm a collage person, but I love finding found images, like, you know, that are not mine, taking them out of context and telling a different story.
Yeah.
I find that really satisfying. And that's what those are doing. You know, you've manipulated them a little bit and you've retold a completely different story from jewelry holders and cake plates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very, very cool.
Thanks.
Speaking of the panties on the line thing. Does anybody, this is not on my list, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Because when I have written about you, people come back with some sexual comments.
I get that once in a while.
Do you? I think it's the pink ones.
Yeah. I mean, that color is just, some of those pinks are just so luscious. Right?
Yeah. I was just curious because I get it every single time.
I mean. It's not, let's just say this, it's not something that I purposely do.
Okay, there, for the record, everybody, there's nothing subliminal going on there.
No, okay. I mean, you know, it's underlying and, you know, I think, you know, the thing is my work is, a lot of it is mimicking things in nature and like, what do a lot of flowers and plants and things in nature really look like?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't purposely try to make my work look sexual or anything like that, but if people want to think that, that's fine.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not going to argue against it.
Well, no, and we'll just let the viewer take away what the viewer wants to take away.
Yeah.
Yeah. okay, and so... You've just had, well, so you're dropping this stuff off that's going down to Miami. What else is there anything else going on that people should know about? That they can come and check out or see your work or big shows coming in the summer or anything?
I'm kind of not sure right now. I know that I'm going to have my next big solo show with Heller Gallery in October.
Mm-hmm.
Next October.
And they're in New York?
Yeah,
yeah.
They're in Chelsea on 10th Avenue between 27th and 28th.
Oh, nice.
So we usually do like a show in like where do they do? Art Southampton.
Okay.
I'm kind of trying to figure that out right now. I've been working on this kind of weird project, and I'll just tell you briefly, is basically I bought an original press that a lot of this glass was made was a glass press with molds.
Okay.
Iron molds. And for the last few months, well, actually since May, the factory where I get this glass from shut down and auctioned off their equipment. And yeah, so I bought a press, an original press, and about 24 original iron molds. So I now have the original mold to make that snail, for example.
Oh my God. Did you just feel like it was Christmas morning?
Yeah, when I found the snail, yeah, I did. But I went through a database of 10,000 images to find that snail. It's really been a pretty crazy, it's been a pretty crazy thing that I did with getting all this equipment. And now I have to actually try to start figuring out how to use it and how to make work with it. So I think that a lot of new different things are going to come out of this.
Right. Well, now, especially since that big show is done and you can probably take a little bit of a breath.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Start experimenting again.
I had been making work for the last few months for SOFA Chicago.
Oh, okay.
And that was just 2 weeks ago. So my big shows are in the fall. Like we do SOFA Chicago and then a month later we do Art Miami every right. year. So in the fall I make work for those shows and then start trying to figure out summer stuff and stuff like that. So
wow. What a cool life you have made yourself.
Thank you. You too.
Well, yeah, actually. Well, and now with my experience in the hot shop, I always have to try and remember what it's called. Is that what it is? Hot shop?
A hot shop. Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Right. I'm always like, hot store? No, that's not it. Okay, so now I have to do this not so speedy speed round.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Normally I do when I first started the podcast, it was a speed round, but I'm so bad at being fast because I always ask more stuff. So it is now the not so speedy speed round. I feel like I should trademark it, but okay. So I'm in Canada. So we've already had our Thanksgiving, but it's Thanksgiving for you guys this weekend, right?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Okay. So pumpkin pie with ice cream or whipped cream?
Ice cream.
Yes. Well, I would actually do both, but yeah, ice cream. Okay, on the same line of questioning, cranberry sauce, hell yes or hell no?
Hell yes.
Some people...
I like the can. the good old-fashioned can.
Yeah, just with the lines in it and everything. Yeah. Okay, I wasn't going to ask this question, but you're into it. You're a Thanksgiving gal. Have you ever had a turducken?
No.
Does that gross you out? It kind of grosses me out.
That one kind of does.
Yeah.
Sure about that one.
My son is like, let's try it. And I'm like, no way.
It's a little excessive.
Yeah, but there's something called a pie caken pie. Have you seen that?
I'd be down with that.
Yeah, it's like a cake with a pie inside of it.
Man, I don't know. I've got a pretty bad sweet tooth, so I'd probably try it.
I would try that for sure with ice cream and whipped cream. Okay, now let's see if you can remember this. The first song you slow dance to.
Oh my God. I feel like it was something really like super 90s, like probably like Poison or something.
That sounds about right. I think mine was like Stairway to Heaven, and you know it's and it's 7 minutes long, and if you're not with somebody good, then you're like, you just can't get out of it for 7 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Okay, and last one. If you could be transported anywhere in the world right now, where would it be? And you don't have to fly there. You get to just get zapped there.
Just get zapped there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Well, since it's the winter, maybe I've never been to like Thailand or Indonesia. Mm-hmm. I kind of would like to go there.
That would be a good place to get dropped, even especially like in about a month from now when it's really cold and snowy.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice.
That would be nice. I've been to Bali before.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, but I think they have a volcano about to explode.
Oh, okay. Maybe I don't want to be
Maybe just like maybe avoid Bali for a little bit longer to see what happens with that whole volcano situation. That's it. That is all of my stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, that was very informative. And this entire time I've just been looking at your little Skype picture with all those little details. So now I'm so excited because now I get to go and put a giant post together. And so I can show everybody what we were talking about.
Do you need me to send you pictures?
I don't think so. I'm going to go to your website and Instagram and stuff, see what I can find. And if there's any holes, I think there might be one because you said there was one thing that you don't actually have on your website yet.
Yeah, Jenny's piece.
Yes.
I feel like I have a better picture of the Bridesmaids Forest piece as well.
Okay, well, you send me what you think.
Yeah, okay. I'll send you tomorrow morning because I'm not going to Thanksgiving till like 4.
Wear your stretchy pants.
Yeah. I'm only going 4 blocks away, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I know. I'm so jealous because I always love that our Thanksgiving's in October because we don't have to wait, you know. But then it's over and the pumpkin pie is gone and then all of my American friends are posting all their pictures and it's like, oh, man.
Now I'm making a pecan pie.
Oh my god, I love them.
Yeah.
What do you put on that? Ice cream?
Yeah, we have this amazing like small batch ice cream shop in my little trendy little neighborhood in Philly.
Yeah.
Like I got their ice cream today, vanilla and sweet potato marshmallow.
No.
Yeah.
What are you gonna put? Are you gonna put that on the pecan pie, or both of them?
I don't know, but why not?
Is anybody else bringing dessert?
Probably.
Yeah, that is gonna be good. I'll just think about you. I'll just lie here and think about all the pie. Well, have a really great Thanksgiving, and
thank you
so much for this. This was so awesome to hear all the inside stuff and to actually get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for the interest.
Oh my gosh, of course.
I appreciate it. I always get a bunch of inquiries and stuff when you do a post. So I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Well, and maybe now we'll get, because I know I have a ton of international listeners. So maybe those international listeners will send you glass from other places other than the U.S.
That would be cool.
Okay, we'll just float that into the universe and see what comes back. Okay, well, enjoy your weekend, and
right,
I will talk to you soon.
Okay, have a good night.
Good night. Bye. Oh, that was so, so, so great. I am so excited to put this post together. And now that I know that she makes all of those teeny tiny bits, I'm even more blown away by her work. Oh, and if you have vintage glass that you do not know what to do with, that you think Amber might be able to turn into a work of art, please reach out. As you heard, she'd be more than happy to have it. I will put her contact info on the post on my site, thejawscurator.com, and you can reach out to her if you like. And with that, I will say thank you so much to Amber for sharing all of her stories and knowledge about the Hot Shop. Thank you to Saatchi Art for supporting the episode, and of course, high fives to you for listening. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.